Hi, my name is Charlie Book, and you're welcome to listen to the Third House podcast. Today, we have an exciting episode, and we have an exciting guest. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Charlie, for having me. I'm really excited to be on the Third House podcast and to share, you know, what I've, been digging into for the last, I don't even know how long it's been now. A little bit about me. My name is Raina J. Liu. What to say about myself? I'm an American astrologer, among other things. I call myself a mixed methods astrologer, which means that I like to use traditional techniques, but I also very much am, I came through the modern tradition, really. So what I try and do is really create a synthesis of the various things that I'm digging into and learning to try and answer some of the deepest questions that we have on our hearts, whether they're conscious or they're unconscious. And I'm really excited to be talking to you.
Awesome. That's great. Do you want to share anything, any details about your chart or like any place?
Oh, yes, sure. Yeah, I'm a Sagittarius sun. I'm Cancer moon. And what else to say? I have a very prominent Aries, which is the subject of our talk today. So I'm looking forward to saying more about that. But I think we'll get into at least those specifics, possibly once we get into the substance. For now, maybe that's those are some of the things that are probably good to know about me at a basic level. I'm very sort of philosophical, but I'm also a very emotionally driven person. And I sort of blend the two in order to help people grow and integrate and be more effective in the world. And that's what I'm really interested in.
That's awesome. Great introduction. So you have taken a big interest in Aries. Do you want to like tell us what is Aries? Who is she? Why do we study her? Why is she interesting? Why are you interested in her?
Yeah. Oh man, these are all very large, broad, and substantive questions. So I'm going to try and break it down piece by piece. And Charlie, feel free to ask me, you know, any like specific question one at a time. But maybe a good place to start with is, what is Aries? And then maybe we can get into who is Aries later. That's a whole nother layer of exploration, right? But Aries, you know, would be well described. Actually, it's really interesting even trying to answer that question, because if you ask people, what is Aries? I'll probably start from the astronomical side of things. Aries is a physical body. She is one of the trans-Neptunian objects that has been discovered around the turn of, you know, the millennium, right? And so after the year 2000, astronomers and planetary scientists started discovering a whole series of different objects beyond Neptune. And these are called the trans-Neptunian objects, both in astronomy as well as in astrology. And Aries is one of those planetary bodies, if you will. There's a whole thing to really say about her, but you know, what Aries is known for, she was discovered in 2005 by a man named Mike Brown from Pasadena, California at Caltech, along with his team. And she was known around the time of her discovery for starting this uproar among astronomers as to what can be considered a planet. The thing is that, you know, many people may know about Pluto getting demoted to a quote-unquote dwarf planet by astronomical groups and things like that. There's a whole debate there. You know, let's see where we get to in our conversation today. But fewer people know that Aries was actually that the planet that led to Pluto getting demoted. And the reason for that is because a lot of the trans-Neptunian objects, you know, they tend to vary in size, but Aries and Pluto are actually the two largest planetary bodies that have been discovered beyond the orbit of Neptune. And so, you know, we had, you know, about, I can't count for some reason, but about eight or so, yeah, like eight planets, right? Pluto was the ninth. And then for a moment, Aries was known as the 10th planet, until there was this whole feverish uproar that was started around, well, what's a planet? Like, what can we consider, you know, a planet, this or that? Many reasons going into that, but a few of the key, I don't know, quote unquote, arbiters or decision makers decided to vote on Eris and therefore also Pluto no longer being considered planets. So a little bit of the astronomical story, we can get into the mythology of Eris as feels appropriate, but you know, what feels so interesting about Eris to me, you know, as an astronomical planet, and in terms of what she stirred up in human events just through her discovery, is so fitting with her mythology as well. And even NASA says, like, if you look on the NASA website, NASA says the name of the planet is very fitting because she challenged the idea of what a planet could look like. And so there's a whole lot that we could say, but maybe that's a good introduction to Eris the planet, you know, which is that she broke the paradigm. And, you know, the more I study Eris, the more I find that that's really what she's up to. I'm happy to say more about that as our conversation goes along. There are a lot of things that Eris, you know, signifies. Maybe a few key words that I'll start with is, you know, to me, Eris is a planet that kicks up a lot of evolution, which I think is a new concept for a lot of people. Like, what does it mean for humans to evolve? What does that actually look like? I think of Eris as a truth-telling activist, somebody who is just going to be unabashed about telling things like they are, which can be very triggering for a lot of people. You know, when she sort of forced you to confront things that you would rather not. And so we can, if we have time and if it makes sense, we can talk about the relationship between Eris and Pluto. What else about Eris? You know, this is a term or phrase that came from the astrologer Henry Seltzer, who actually wrote a book on Eris called The Tenth Planet. And he had this wonderful phrase called, that he calls a feminine warrior for soul purpose. And as I have deeply investigated the archetype, I have found that to be not the only descriptor of Eris. There are a lot of different sides to her, but that one is absolutely true. Here's how I discovered Eris and why it still almost shakes me to the core to this day. I discovered Eris hanging out with my sibling, who is a member of Gen Z. Now, most of Gen Z was born either in the very late 20th century, or they're pretty much all 21st century people. This is the Pluto and Sagittarius generation, right? So even if they were born in 98 or 99, you know, they only really spent a couple of years before we went straight into the 21st century. Well, Eris is a 21st century planet. And so I find it remarkable that I sort of first gained access to this archetype through someone I know who is younger than myself and who is the embodiment of a generation that doesn't really want to live anymore with old ideas. You know, bad ideas left over from the 20th century and previous centuries. So here's what we were doing. My sibling and I were driving, you know, we were going to visit our parents. And one of our traditions that we like to have is when we're driving together, we put together playlists and we end up sharing with one another. Well, we were, you know, in the car and I ended up getting around to one of their songs on the playlist. And actually it's funny because the song was by Aurora, if you know who that is. Aurora is a musician. She's a member of Gen Z, and I believe she's a Norwegian musician.
Now I recognize it.
Yeah. Very popular in the United States.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of her music is, I mean, I can feel some of the Nordic energy in what she sings, but, you know, you can kind of feel like, you can feel the rivers and you can feel the trees and all of that, you know, and sometimes you can even feel sort of like the old Norse, like, you know, strong Viking type energy, right, when she is performing and, you know, and creating her music, which I think is wonderful. It helps reconnect me to Scandinavia, right, which it's been a long time since I've visited and been there. But my sibling played me this song by Aurora called The Seed. And at first I was like, I don't know what I think of this song. You know, so we go through the intro, the song and all. And then eventually it's like, oh, okay, I'm listening to it. It feels very Nordic, you know, cool. And then we get to the chorus of the song. And in the chorus of the song, you can feel this like intense, pulsating energy. This is going somewhere, I promise. You can feel this intense pulsating energy of the earth. And in the chorus of the song, she draws on what is believed to be a proverb by the Cree people, you know, the indigenous Cree people from North America. And they have a saying that goes something like, you cannot eat money. When the last tree has fallen and the river is poisoned, only then will we realize that we cannot eat money. And I have little goosebumps as I'm saying this. So when I heard that, I was like, this is interesting. This isn't, this isn't just stylized music from a certain region of the world. Like, something is going on here in this song. And I was fascinated, and something about that song struck me so much that I actually started a new playlist. I started this new playlist called Woman Warrior. I just titled it that. This was before I ever knew about Eris. Okay. And I love building playlists. So I started looking for other cultural artifacts that sort of express the same energy. And this energy is this sort of fierce feminine energy, but one that didn't sort of fall into old tropes around gender or old tropes around, you know, like I started Googling things like songs about female empowerment. And a lot of the songs that I was listening to, they were still defining their value, like relative to a man, or they were still, you know, sort of attempting to create a certain level of empowerment, but I couldn't feel it. Like there was something about those songs where the people who were singing still felt like they were in here trying to self-advocate. And that was so different from the song by Aurora, which was like, I'm out here. And so that really interested me, right? I was like, there's a lot of talk about feminism. And obviously I don't know everything about feminism. I don't identify as a woman or even as a non-binary person. But why is it that so many, and I use women both literally, but also metaphorically, and also in the most expansive way possible with the word. Why is it that so many women or so many people who have a certain feminine spirit, why is it that not enough of them are really going out there? What is it about this archetype that is, why is it still so restricted? So I started thinking about, well, who is out there that is actually speaking this energy in an unabashed way? And I could only think of two women I knew. And those two were Greta Thunberg from Sweden, as well as a woman from the United States named Marianne Williamson. Okay, this was still before I ever met Eris. So I don't remember how I got here, but I must have been exploring just more of astrology. And I was like, I wonder what Eris is all about. So I went on YouTube and I, you know, searched up Eris, and I found an episode of Henry Seltzer talking to Michael Bryan of the Oraculos podcast. And I kid you not, the only two people that Henry Seltzer mentioned in that podcast episode were Greta Thunberg and Marianne Williamson.
Wow.
And that's when I knew. That is when I knew. Nobody else was mentioned. He only mentioned those two women. I went, Yeah, because those two tell it like it is, and they make no apologies for saying exactly what's going on. So that's my long but maybe very substantive story of how I met the goddess. And then as I continued doing research, I found professors of women's studies who are basically talking about, ways that mainstream feminism isn't actually serving women. There's a woman named Mikki Kendall here in the United States who talks about this idea of hood feminism. What is mainstream feminism leaving behind? Who's getting left behind? Is it really for all women? Is it really for all people who aren't cis men? Is it even for cis men? And so slowly but surely, I started getting into this emerging archetype of like this new force that is essentially helping to rebalance our overly one-sided development as a global collective, where we've been so obsessed with the masculine principle. And anyone who has been affected in some way by what I would call American neoliberal capitalism has been so, and forms before that, has been so indoctrinated by the masculine principle. And now in the 21st century, we're finally seeing a pushback. And that pushback is, it's growing pretty fierce. And that really interests me because I think that that is a symbol and a manifestation of the evolution that this goddess, who we haven't even really started talking about, is kicking up in the 21st century.
Awesome, mic drop. Oh, this is great. Thank you for telling the story. I think it's nice to, I love to hear what people's like personal relationship with the planets and our celestial bodies are. So thank you for telling that story. So who is the goddess Ares then?
Fantastic, fantastic question. So Eris is traditionally known as the Greek goddess of discord and strife. And that's a very interesting designation because, the first thing that comes up for me is when I say that, what comes up for people? What assumptions are occurring to people? What images are they forming of a person who's labeled as, the goddess of discord and strife? A little bit about the mythology of Eris. She, for those who have had, any real contact with Greek mythology, a lot of the biggest works of Greek mythology, in terms of literature, the Iliad, the Aeneid, and the Odyssey, all of those works were situated in the context of the Trojan War. And the Trojan War started with this event called or known as the Judgment of Paris. What is lesser known is that that event was more or less kicked up by and around the story of Eris. So here's how I like to tell the story. During the Judgment of Paris, this occurred during the wedding of Peleus and Thetis, who were the parents of Achilles, who many folks are more familiar with. And during this wedding, basically all of the gods and goddesses were invited, except her. They knew, yeah, everyone was like everybody was invited except Eris, because she's the goddess of strife and discord. Why would we want to have her, right? But just imagine being in the shoes of, here's this great wedding, this beautiful thing, everyone's getting together, there are gods or humans, but Eris doesn't get invited because she's a troublemaker. Well, put yourself in those shoes and think to yourself, like, what would you be feeling? Think you'd probably be feeling things like resentment, jealousy, anger, to some degree.
Rage, probably,
Rage even.
even if I was Aries.
Yeah, exactly, right? And so what happened in that case was, because she was so enraged by her exclusion, she decided to take a golden apple, and she inscribed on the apple the word Callisti, which translates to for the fairest. She throws it over the fence into the wedding, and it kind of, rolls into the scene. And it's this like beautiful award, kind of like a for the fairest, right? And what happens is the gods and goddesses see it, and Hera, Athena, and Aphrodite start to try and compete for the apple to be named the fairest. The apple was basically given to Paris of Troy to judge, like, who would be the fairest. And then once he took possession of the apple and said, okay, well, I'll give it to the fairest, these three other goddesses started bribing Paris of Troy. They started schmoozing with him. They literally stripped naked at the scene of the wedding. This is the wedding of Peleus and Thetis, and the three of them literally unrobed and said, I'll give you this if, like, just imagine being so enamored with this apple that someone just wrote a couple words on. And then guess what happened? They all did this. Paris of Troy ended up giving it to, I'm actually blanking, but I don't remember who he gave it to. But essentially,
Helena, maybe? No, it's one of the three, is it? Helen of Troy? Or is that a complete other story?
She's in the story. She's in the story.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm just forgetting which goddess had access to Helen of Troy.
Yeah.
Or had the connection to it. But he gave it to whichever goddess had access to it because he thought that she was the most beautiful woman in the world or something. We'll have to check the records.
Yeah.
The point is, that whole event started the Trojan War, because whichever goddess he gave it to promised him essentially access to Helen of Troy.
Mm.
But she was already married to the king of Troy. And so that whole thing began because Eris was basically enraged by her own exclusion. And she decided to kick up this whole thing because for some reason she wasn't allowed in the party.
Mm.
And so for me, that image is very much seared into my mind and my being, because imagine being completely shut out by a system.
Mm.
Well, what is that if not what so many of us are collectively dealing with in the 21st century, as conversations around diversity, equity, and inclusion are, you know, on the rise continuously. If you look at some of the research that's out there, people have run data analyses on words like, both inclusion words and exclusion words, homophobia, transphobia, misogyny, what have you, rising in their rates in the tabloids. And you also see other, you know, more positive words around inclusion also rising, all starting around the time of Eris's discovery. Wow. And so I find it so interesting that this one goddess who was excluded is kicking up all of these storms and these conflicts and this sort of strife in order to start changing our systems a little bit more, to be a little bit more inclusive of people who actually belonged at the party this entire time. So that's a little bit about Eris. I'm going to have to go find that source. It's not coming to me today in terms of who got the apple, but that's really her story. You know,
let's make it a cliffhanger. Like, people can get to know it later.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah. You go do your own research, you know,
yeah.
Figure that
find
out.
Find out who got the apple.
Who got the apple. There you go. But yeah, that's a little bit about her story. And it's, you know, the ways that she is manifesting, I think people are only just starting to wake up to what she's doing, but she's been at this for a long time, but it's her time now.
So the planet Eris that we use in astrology, she has a very long orbit time, doesn't she? She's been in the sign Aries for a long time, and I think that's in tropical astrology.
I don't think there's anyone alive right now who has Eris in a sign other than an Aries. In fact, I think even Chris Brennan tweeted something at some point like, what sign is your Eris in? I'm trying to see something.
It's like a tweet I saw earlier, which was like, do you have the north node opposed to south node? Then it means you're in the right place.
It's like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, Eris has an extremely long orbit of 557 years. Yeah, you know, Pluto's got nothing on Eris, you know, in terms of an orbit. So if you think about, you know, planetary like cycles, right, as essentially symbols and reflections of transformational cycles. Well, you know, like we're here in the US, we're having the Pluto return to the United States. We're going through a lot. Imagine how long it takes to transform these broader systems. And so, you know, I feel like Eris is maybe a good summary of Martin Luther King Jr.'s, you know, what he said about how the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And I think Eris's long orbit is actually possibly a strong embodiment of that. Now, I'm also a believer in some level of free will, you know, even though, you know, I'm also interested in looking at fate. And, you know, I believe that the more conscious we can become of the Eris archetype, the more readily we can bend that arc towards justice and start to experience the benefits of peace, harmony, you know, and these other things that I think this archetype promises.
That's beautifully put.
I really want to know I'm going to search this. Is that all right with you?
Yeah.
Who did Paris give the apple to? Paris gave the golden apple to Aphrodite, the goddess of love, beauty, and fertility, who in return promised to give him beautiful Helen of Troy, thereby triggering the Trojan War. It's weird to me that Aphrodite had access to another woman. I don't know what's going on there, but...
Like, okay, yeah, so... maybe it says something about, like, unfair beauty standards and, like, beauty... being like oppressive or like using other women. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it was a beauty contest. I like to call the you know, the three goddesses, Athena, Aphrodite, and Hera, I like to call them the mean girls of Greek mythology. You can't sit with us. So, you know, mean yeah, girls. So
Greek mythology version.
They were mean girls.
Yeah.
They were mean girls. Even if you look at there's a whole religion called Discordianism, which I think came out of the United States. Some people call it a parody religion or a mock religion. I think both, and I think it's a parody mock religion, but it's like, it's pretty legitimate. It's like really smart. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the offshoots of that body of work involves people writing like personifications of Eris, and Eris sort of calls people out for like being shallow and saying stupid things, and like it's very like calling out the mean girls sort of a thing. So yeah, but Aphrodite's the one, which makes sense because, you know, I guess if you're the goddess of beauty and fertility and it's sort of this like shallow, you know, no disrespect to makeup, but makeup contest, you know, yeah, like of course she's going to be the one in the story that it's given to, thereby starting the Trojan War. So yeah, Eris is interesting because, you know, it's kind of like the Trojan War. Some people say, oh, well, Eris started it. And Eris would say, no, I didn't start it. Like, that was really dumb. Why would they start a war over something like that? Like, it was literally a dumb beauty. Like, do you see what you're doing?
Yeah.
So it's very interesting, that whole dynamic, because that's how the conundrum that many activists run into. And I read a newsletter like talking about the many conundrums that activists will run into. They're dealing with this all the time. They're trying to say, well, I'm just stating the obvious. And then people have all these projections and things that they just really don't want to look into. And then they project onto the person who's trying to tell them what's actually going on. Mm. So it's a very common dynamic with many people who have the Eris archetype, until they can become more conscious of what's going on. And it doesn't take the problem away, but it at least gives them the awareness to go, okay, so here's maybe how I can handle the situation if I want to help to change or help transform the situation.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of beauty and this beauty contest that the three goddesses were in. I'm thinking of how much we exclude people from beauty too. I guess Eris was probably excluded from the beauty. She was probably not even in the contest, or like, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I just feel like there might be some connection with beauty and being excluded from that, because I think of a lot of like trans, non-binary, and queer folks who are like who are not like invited into the room of beauty, but like have started our own spaces for like liberation of beauty and just taking back the beauty in the world.
Yeah, I think that's really relevant. You know, Eris is very interested in inclusion, but Eris is also interested in diversity and equity. And mm-hmm. none of those things were present at the judgment of Paris. Mm-hmm. None of them, right? And so, you know, what's really interesting is, I know I mentioned earlier that, you know, Eris is sometimes known as a feminine warrior for sole purpose. But the reason why I think that's even true for her is because the way that many of our societies have developed over the last few centuries, anyway, is because the masculine principle, i.e., you know, patriarchal forms and structures, were so emphasized. And so what she's doing is she's pushing back. Mm. But if we lived in a world where there was this like overreach of the feminine principle, Eris would actually probably push back with a masculine principle. Mm. So what I find really beautiful about Eris is that, I mean, she is a goddess, but I think she's one of the few goddesses that isn't overly gendered. Mm. And I think that's really cool about her. She, you know, I think, I mean, I work for the goddess, so I have very different opinions about Eris, but I think many people might view Eris, at least initially, as the opposite of beautiful. You know, she's kind of like the dark, brooding, what's wrong with her? Like, why does she have such an anger problem? You know, things that people project onto women and trans and non-binary people all the time. But I think Eris sees it very differently. Mm-hmm. And I think as a result, to me, it's impossible to have an Eris or an Eresian environment where people don't get to belong. Like that's completely antithetical to, I think, what she's about. She's all about allowing everyone to belong. Mm, mm. She is all about, and we can get into this too, but you know, I don't identify as a modern astrologer, but certainly, you know, the outer planets all have archetypal associations that have been assigned to them, right? Uranus is having associations with Aquarius, Neptune to Pisces, Pluto to Scorpio. Well, you know, the consistent trend right now is that Eris seems to have a lot of connections with the sign of Libra.
Wow.
So there is an element of harmony and of justice that is really present in the archetype.
That's really interesting. I haven't heard about that. And I think, I mean, Venus can be very associated with justice too, and Libra can be associated with justice. But I mean, Venus can also be very vain, and like, who, Libra is a sign, I think, that very much asks who gets to be included and who is excluded, because Saturn is exalted there. So there's Saturn questions, and Saturn is very much like the archetype of someone who is excluded, who lives in a like away from society, if we think the 12th house and the joy, Saturn's joy. Mm-hmm. There, so that's really interesting. If Aries would have an association with Libra, I think that's fantastic, like Venus and Aries just having some conversations in that sign.
Yeah. And you know, I actually have a talk where I go into a little bit more of like these subtle nuances, like what is Venus's relationship to justice? What is Eris's relationship to justice? How do they show up differently? One of the things I could say is one of the cases for putting or connecting See, we don't put the gods and goddesses where they belong. They just belong, and then we get the message later, right? Yeah. But one of the things that could be said about Libra is that every action has a consequence. I think that, to me, that's a metaphysical theme of Libra, but especially it becomes clear when we go beyond just looking at Venus signifies these things and Saturn is these things. But I think metaphysically, Eris is also sort of this like, well, every action has a consequence. The Trojan War started not because I threw in the apple. The Trojan War started because y'all were dumb.
Yeah. Like,
and Saturn, I think, would say something similar, even though Saturn might be at some level, might be more interested in like hard realities, sometimes outer realities. Eris is someone who is much more like esoteric, who says, I need you to look inside yourself in order to understand what's going on at the cause and effect level, which is why so many people are befuddled by the things that she's got to say, right? Mm-hmm. Because if we, especially now, when we live in a world where, you know, you say the word astrology and many people, I said this in, you know, a meeting the other day, and the person I said this to, who has involvement in the world of like astronomy and things like that, literally like ducked their face outside of the camera view and like covered their face with their hands. And I went, wow, it's that offensive, huh? Like to talk about planetary archetypes. So yeah, I think there's an element of essentially forcing people to reckon with their own inner worlds that Eris takes on, which is why she's controversial, which is why she got demoted. It's not her fault, sort of, you know, it's because she kicked something up that now we're on this journey to call that out and transform that. So yeah, she's very much an activist, big time.
That's beautiful. Okay, so how come we hear so little about Eris in the astrological community? Why do so few astrologers talk about Eris? Do you think?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's a lot of things here. And this is such an interesting question to me because I feel like I'm going to make my own controversial entry into the like online astrology world now by like calling out a bunch of things and watch, the people are going to be my DMs. They're going to be triggered. Watch me say these things. So a couple of things. I think Eris is one of the most challenging planets to deal with for a couple reasons. Number one, for those who look at like the orbital inclination of the planets. Most of the planets have an orbital inclination of 7 or 8 degrees or less, all the way out to Neptune. Then you get to Pluto, and Pluto has an orbital incline of 17 degrees. So that's already pretty challenging. And, you know, for those who have, you know, read a lot of the works in modern astrology on Pluto, like dealing with Pluto problems, like Pluto is a tough planet. Like the US is going through its Pluto return. And like, I do not say this lightly, like it is not a chill time here. Pluto's already tough. Eris is the planet that kicks up your Pluto problems. So Pluto forces you to actually like transform the shadows. Eris shows you that the shadows are there. And her orbital inclination is at 44.
You want to just explain what that means to someone who doesn't know about orbital inclination?
Yeah, great question. So the way that it's often understood is that the ecliptic, right, which is, you know, it's relative to the Earth, is known as the things that are on the ecliptic are sort of known as conforming to consensus reality.
Mm-hmm. The sun's orbit around the Earth, if you will speak in very geocentric terms, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's kind of the solar plane of it all.
A lot of this is around having to do with the sun. There are people who can sort of explain in astronomical terms what that is and how that works more effectively than I can. But, you know, there are these two concepts that I think are related. One is if a planet is more or less, you know, like orbiting on the ecliptic, it more or less fits into like how the psyche is used to operating. Just as for those who are looking at declination in astrology, right? Any planet that is within, 23, 25 north or south of the declination of the sun, the maximum and minimum, are said to be within like the kingdom, so to speak. But any planets that are outside of that, they're the weird ones. They're the ones that like don't conform to consensus reality. So Pluto already cuts through consensus reality by cutting through the plane of the ecliptic at 17. But for Eris to then go and do this at 44 is like kind of a huge deal. So I'm going to come back to your question and try and give at least what I can see currently around why Eris isn't really talked about. Number one, you know, Eris really is a developmental planet in the sense that like if she kicks something up, whether it's, again, the judgment of Paris, whether it's any person who's sort of calling things out in a system, in your personal life, and what have you, it's sort of on you to go and transform all of those things. And doing that is really hard. Like a lot of times we don't know what we don't know, right? And so anytime a new paradigm has, unfolds, well, that almost always starts because Eris is the one kicking it up. Actually, Eris is really prominent in the chart of a lot of great scientific innovators as well. So there's a lot of connection with new paradigm creation through Eris. Why don't a lot of astrologers talk about her? Number one, I think there's been such a big focus on the resurgence of traditional astrology over the last 10 to 20 years, which I think has been really important. I study that stuff myself. I read Demetra George, and I've consumed a lot of stuff from Chris, Rob et al., right? These folks, really important. And also, those seven traditional planets are not going to cover the aspects of consciousness that Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, and Eris are, and others that we can't get to here, right? Like Sedna, for example, also another really important aspect of emergent consciousness. I think that, yeah, a lot of the interest in traditional astrology, I think, has been part of why not a lot of people are focused on Eris, which at some level is understandable, depending on what you want your astrology to do for you. But I think where I'm most curious is why a lot of folks in the astrology community who talk a lot about social justice, why they don't look at Eris. If there's anyone that's interested in social justice, like in astrology, like Eris is, she is the main character, but I guess she was always also the one who was kicked out of the wedding. So if we're not ready to invite Eris to the party, even if we call ourselves an activist, well, of course we're not going to acknowledge her or talk about her. And, we're also in the middle of a lot of culture wars right now, where a lot of people who are interested in social justice, look, I want all the justice, right? And also, I mean, I think anyone who has sort of been in this field recognizes, well, like, you see like anti-woke movements, right, online and things like that. And it's like, okay, like on the one hand, yeah, like the people who are trying to start anti-woke movements, whatever that might mean, yeah, there's some shadows there. There's some real shadows there. And also, is there something that they're saying that we can try and better understand, so we can integrate it? The problem is, because of the culture wars, a lot of people who self-identify as especially like left activists, they might start to like buckle down, and dig in their heels and say, burn it all to the ground. And it's like, if you and I are hanging out over drinks and you say burn it to the ground, sure, I get you. But if you're also trying to talk to the full scope and the full diversity of humanity, and that's what you're saying, and you are seeing them have this other reaction, which is just really not helping your cause. It's making it worse. And instead of looking more deeply at how you can solve the problem, you decide to get even more frustrated and basically castigate them as bad people. And that's just the end of the story.
The bad apple.
The bad apple. Like, you miss the point. You miss the point. It's you like, yes, oppression is real. Yes, like racism is real. White supremacy is real. Homophobia, transphobia, like all of these things are real. But how do we answer the question? And for us to do that, I believe that people who call themselves activists need to take a deeper look at the actual spiritual and metaphysical underpinnings of how reality actually works. But that's hard work. So, you know, I also think that that might be another reason, which is that maybe Eris just isn't well understood. And if she is understood, you know, a lot, I've seen many people in so-called spiritual communities use things like spirituality or astrology to justify pre-existing beliefs rather than as a tool for their own genuine development. I'll use this so I can reinforce, like I can basically confirmation bias my way to this and ignore the parts that I'd rather not ignore. It's like, you know, and this is why I started a newsletter, you know, where I talk about the, here's the thing. Underneath all of the challenges of the culture wars that we're in, which Eris is, I really think she is the answer to the culture war, by the way. She's a harmony goddess, but it's the discord that helps us evolve towards a state of harmony. What was I saying? You know, it's sort of like, I can see the love that is underneath every person's intention to advocate for a better world. But how we advocate shows a lot about how we actually understand the world and what we think about the world. And Eris is sort of someone who is right in the middle of that, where, you know, one of the things I like to say to folks is, you know, when we're talking about people, to be as aware as possible of times when we're using words like good or bad. Eris probably wouldn't use words like good or bad as moralistic judgments.
She wouldn't give a fuck, I guess.
She's neutral. She's actually quite impersonal, which is actually why I think she makes a lot of sense in Libra, because she's very passionate. She's completely for the underdog, but she's systemic. In the way that people talk about systemic racism, systemic oppression, Eris is systemic anti-oppression, which sort of means like, yeah, like I'm just going to move things back to equity when I see inequity. That's it. That's it. And so, yeah, it's really not so personal. It's actually like, it's more, let's understand what's going on and to restore our lives, to restore the world to a certain level of harmony, we have to be willing to look at the systems and then, you know, be willing to do something about it. That's where I go with Eris. You know, I think she's going to be critical to everything that people are trying to make sense of in the 21st century. Why would you try and solve 21st century problems? This is back to astrologers. No disrespect to any of the other planets, right? I love all the planets. We need all of them. But why do people think that they can solve the issues of the 21st century and not go beyond Saturn? It makes no sense. I use traditional rulerships. I believe in sacred geometry. I use whole sign houses. Why do people think that you can get there without the transpersonal planets, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, and I'll add Eris to that? There's no way. If Eris is so obviously directly connected to all of the global crises that we have right now, all of the, you know, there are many people in the space who call our current crisis a meta crisis. It's a meaning crisis. Well, Eris is a meta goddess. You put two and two together, it's like, if you want to solve the 21st century's issues, it might be useful to get to know who she is. So that's why, you know, that's why I think she's important. That's why I think that, yeah, like I just spoke at the Queer Astrology Conference a few months ago. Yeah, let's queer everything. We can queer Mercury. We can, well, Mercury was queer from the start, but yes. We can queer Mercury. We can queer Venus. We can queer Mars. Great. But we're only going to get so far if we're still leaving Eris out of the party.
Yeah.
I have this, I don't know, I've got this like dream or vision, you know, where we're always going to be evolving. And so there's always going to be some part of us that is going to continue to be on this journey of learning to include even more. So there's always going to be a bit of Eris that is like, are you going to let in more of me now? Are you going to let in more of me? But, you know, my understanding and belief based on my experience with Eris is, unless we let Eris into the party, we're going to get the same thing. You can't do the same thing over and over and expect different results. And Eris is sort of like knocking at the door of the party. And I just have this vision of like Eris being welcome at the party. Like you were talking about, you know, trans and non-binary people earlier. Why do we, I mean, I'm all for creating your own spaces. Why do people have to work so hard to create their own spaces? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why is that hard?
Exactly.
And it, so for me, it has everything to do with inclusive capacity. And Eris is like, you get to know Eris, including people gets a lot easier.
Mm. Exactly. Well said. Yeah. I just started thinking about Chiron going over that, transiting and being conjunct Aries, kind of.
Yep.
Yeah. And I was just thinking about talking from a pretty like personal place here. I had some you know, stupid things about being trans and using gender bathrooms this fall, and I had to like go to talk to the headmaster, and there was like a big thing about should trans people be allowed to use the bathrooms and all this old crap, you know, that we hear about all the time. And this is in progressive Sweden, you know, but we have this whole debate here too. And I was just thinking, because I talked to an astrologer the other day, a friend, and we talked about like, because my Saturn is where Aries is, natally. So there is a lot of questions about being excluded and all that, and Chiron was involved, and there were all these issues, but I haven't thought about Aries that I was like, come on, welcome me to the table, god damn it, you know? And I think that's like a real thing that was happening there, and that's just a personal story for me.
Yeah, thank you. Can I respond to that and just even reflect on that triple conjunction that you're having?
Yeah, sure.
It feels like with Saturn, Eris, and Chiron like all coming to the same place, you know, there's this like this transmutation of what it means to belong as an independent self, but also to advocate for structures that can welcome that sort of assertive independence. Mm. You don't have to like, people have this stereotype about Aries of, oh, Aries just hurts people because it's ruled by Mars and, you know, it's brash. And it's like, yeah, if you're not conscious, of course. But it really, yeah, it really seems like with that triple conjunction, there is this like invitation of like, how can I transmute the pain that others sometimes project onto me that creates this like feeling less than, you know, unnecessarily, and then to say, well, you know what, like, forget about that. Like, I get to self-advocate and transmute that and, you know, create new structures.
Yeah.
I don't care what you have to say about this. Like, this is important to me. You're not gonna, you know, but then also learning to harmonize in that process. So it's not just, I feel like with Saturn and Chiron by themselves, it's like you have a malefic with Chiron in Aries in fall, right? It's like that by itself, I think could be, I mean, I guess you could transmute through Chiron, but it's at least initially, it's got this like, this really hurts. Mm. And then I think when you bring in Eris, it's a little bit more like, I've got the gumption to challenge this. Mm. And I've got the gumption to interesting because if Eris, you know, suppose Eris is actually like tied to Libra, Libra's a cardinal sign. Mm-hmm. Eris kicks things up is what I like to say. Mm-hmm. She's a Kickstarter, right? So I will make a scene and it'll seem chaotic to you, but it's actually harmony to me.
Yeah.
It seems like chaos to you because you're so used to your outdated and antiquated ideas of what trans people can and cannot do. And so you go feel chaotic about it, but this feels like order to me. This is just evolution towards a place where like a system that is actually natural. It's like biodiversity. We benefit from having if every bird looked the same, the world doesn't benefit. There's a Marianne Williamson, who I mentioned earlier. She loves to like tweet pictures of really interesting birds. And they're beautiful birds and they're actual birds.
Oh.
And to me, it's like with Eris, it's just, why are you so against biodiversity? Mm. What's your issue?
It's like, crazy.
You know, I mean, like, we could talk about autism too.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I mean, this all depends on how one defines disability, right? But I mean, there are still people talking about autism. Like, it's like a, I don't know. It's like, oh, this is so bad. Like, you know, like there's something wrong with somebody. It's like, no, it's a different feature.
Exactly. And I mean, just being trans, I mean, to get, I have just transitioned like socially, but I'm waiting to get the medical transition. And like to be able to get to that place in Sweden, I have to get a psychiatric diagnosis that says I'm trans. So that's also like making it like something ugly that's not beautiful. I think we come back to the beauty thing again. It's like, no, being different, being seen as weird is not seen as beautiful, but just look at how non-binary and trans the nature is. Like, look at seahorses and look at like how flowers pollinate. It's like, it's all chaos and it's all beautiful.
I think that's so well said and beautifully said. It's chaos and it's beautiful. And what I was wanting to say earlier was, you know, I think from the eyes of Eris, it's just like, this just is. Mm. Why are we so caught up about it? But, you know, it's really, I think what she's here to do is she's here to challenge people's like antiquated structures of consciousness. And so whether it's in an individual or whether it's in a system, or in Sweden, for example, you have to go get a psychiatric diagnosis to do this. I'm not saying that we just immediately go to, all right, well, there's nothing to it, but it's like, why are we still stuck there?
Yeah,
exactly. And Eris be like, what is this? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, many people actually talk about Eris. I mean, I call Eris a rebalancing force. This also operates on a natural level. Mm. So when we look at global weather systems, if you think about, you know, the climate crisis, if the Earth's resources are being abused, like, do you think the Earth is just going to sit there and take it? Mm. It doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't.
You know?
She's going to be mad.
She's going to be mad. It's the fierce mother.
Yeah.
You know? You don't protect the babies, the fierce mother is going to come out and say, no, you get back. And in every mammalian species that survives and thrives, you know, there's a common anthropological characteristic. And I got this from Marianne Williamson, who says this all the time, but an Eresian running for president, like that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You know, the common anthropological characteristic is the fierce behavior of the adult female when she senses a threat to her cubs. Mm. So at the global level, why would you expect that, you know, like Joe Biden approving the Willow Project and more offshore drilling, you can just do that and expect no consequences?
Yeah.
That's not how it works. Every cause has an effect. That is the message of Eris. And so
I love that you brought up Greta Thunberg before, or I should say it in Swedish. Why shouldn't I say it in Swedish? Her name is Greta Thunberg. but she, I mean, just the climate crisis is just like, I'm also thinking of, you know, Ares not getting a seat at the table, but also not invited to the party. But we also forget about planet Earth all the time, both in like general talks about the environment, and like she doesn't get a say, but I mean, we also forget about the Earth in astrology. So even if it's all based on planet Earth. So
yeah. Can I say something to that really quickly?
Yeah, sure.
Diana Rose Harper wrote something really beautiful on her Instagram page a few weeks ago. And she said, the most important planet in astrology is Earth.
Yeah.
If we don't have Earth, we don't have this. If we don't have Earth, we don't have that. We don't have Earth. We don't have any of this.
Yeah.
And I think for many people, there was this moment of like, I keep forgetting that. I keep projecting to these other planets so that the planets can solve my problems, or so I can go commune with them. Great. Mm-hmm. But if we don't commune with the Earth, if we don't commune with our ancestry, mm-hmm. our inheritance, our home, like, what are we communing with? And so that's also my call out to the astrology community, which is, yeah, we're doing great work, but if we want to be taken seriously, I think astrologers are some of the people who should be taken the most seriously. But I also believe that if we are going to have that credibility, we have to take a good look at ourselves and really ask what we're adding to the table, or if we're just pumping out more Instagram content about, you know, the keywords of Mercury.
Yeah. What conversations do we need to have? What conversations are actually important? What do we communicate? I mean, we could just look at Mercury again as like the ruler, the traditional ruler of astrology. Like, Mercury is super non-binary for a start, and they're always like choosing between day and night, and just like not having a gender, just choosing, picking and choosing a gender sometimes, but it's also always looking at the different sides. So I was thinking about what you were talking about earlier, about like you linking both the modern and the traditional and ancient perspectives. And I think that is very much the nature of astrology, because that's the nature of Mercury, to look at the different perspectives and to like integrate them together. And I think that's beautiful. And like, we need to go to both planet Earth and to Aries probably. So
yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, with Mercury signifying astrology, or especially in traditional astrology, it's like, are we just dwelling at describing significations, or are we actually like, what does a real embodiment of Mercury actually look like? What is the new underworld that we need to get into, right? Yeah. Are we going to go down into Hades with this or not, so that we can also experience, you know, like the cosmic illumination of Hermes Trismegistus? Mm-hmm. You know, we've got to have both. We've got to, as the politicians say, walk and chew gum at the same time. Like,
politicians. And I think what you say about Hades, I mean, Mercury in its retrograde cycle, it just dips into Hades, the underworld, all the time. But we just talk about the Mercury retrograde and how it's gonna
technology,
like,
and like, you know, and it's like, I mean, I'm not trying to, I have a Mercury Pluto conjunction natally, so I you know, I'm privy to getting all the way down there. But you know, I'm not saying that when people go through Mercury retrogrades that they have to, you know, completely go Pluto with it. But I think you're right that there is sort of this acknowledgement of like, when Mercury is retrograde, who really is Mercury? Mm. And to me, my reference point is, you know, Orpheus and, you know, that whole story, right? About, you know, going to the end of the world and with Eurydice, right? And all of that. I mean, Mercury is sort of taking a bit of that journey as well. Maybe there's even some connection between, I have to study the Orphic hymns. I want to see if there's a connection between Mercury and the Orphic hymns. But yeah, it comes back to that for me with astrologers is, like astrologers at some level, they really get it. But I always think like when someone is not taken seriously, part of the issue is maybe somebody else and their own limitations. But what part of it has to do with us? And I think that's, Eris is pretty both sides in that respect too. The scales are, you know, I always say too, you know, the unconscious manifestations of Eris, it's just sort of like, it's almost like a dark Pluto as well. It's just sort of like vengeful and hateful and, you know, I didn't get what's mine. So, but what happens, that's not really like Eris, you know, you look at things like the pandemic. When the pandemic started, Eris and Pluto were in a square aspect. So it was all about, well, the high version of that was, okay, we need to really include one another and help each other figure out how to survive and get through things together. The low version is, let me get what's mine, screw you, I don't want to wear a mask, forget this, forget that. And then of course, you know, at its most unconscious level, like I wouldn't be surprised if a poor embodiment of Eris had to do with things like reactionary right-wing movements, you know, white Christian nationalism, and things like that. It's a different kind of reactivity, but that is one that is like deeply unconscious. And what the reason I say this stuff is because I think Eris at her best would be fierce up until the scales are balanced. So right now she's fierce because we have been so one-sided in our development as a global society for so long. But if ever Eris started going into like, or, you know, we started going into overstepping the line, overstepping the boundaries of what's actually harmonious and correct, Eris would actually push back in the other direction. And yeah, she would say, no, you've taken this too far.
Exactly. Maybe she is like trying to correct like all sides of the political spectrum right now.
That's just, like, exactly. She is the answer to the culture war. So it's learning how to have conflict. It's learning how to have discord. It's learning how to have strife in ways that are holy. And then when they're holy, we also just stop taking ourselves so seriously, you know? And so that's another aspect of Eris. She's actually really funny. She's actually, I mean, she deals with it. It's really interesting because she deals with some of the most like triggerable, like dark things in humanity. She's funny. She's like, this is all a joke. Like, yeah. Sacred trickster kind of energy. So actually in that sense, she's very much like Mercury. They're both real tricksters. But I think Mercury is much more about like the information and the retrieval and the conveying. And Eris is more like, get out of your minds. Yeah.
She's angrier.
Oh yeah. She's like, I need to instigate some change here because this isn't working.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Right. So one question I thought about was like, what would you say if people would like to know, get to know Eris better? Like, how do you connect with Eris? And how do you, like, get more of a feel of her? I think we're getting a big feel of her now, but if you want to work more with Eris, where would you recommend people start?
This is great. Thank you for asking. I'm especially grateful for the question because I think I sort of come from Eris. Like, I'm learning to embody Eris, but I also come from it. And what do I mean by that? I actually think Eris has a lot to do with a lot of East Asian philosophy. I think Eris is actually a very, I know we're talking about Western astrology, but I think Eris is a very Taoist planet. So if you think about the yin yang or the yin yang, as people will say, it's all about that balance between, you know, the archetypal feminine and masculine, between the dark and light, between all those things. So I think many things that relate to that principle is a good way to start to get to know Eris. So if, you know, people get into things like Tai Chi, you know, it's a way to understand a little bit of what balance could look like, depending on, you know, who you're practicing with. Aikido is another way of maybe understanding, because Aikido is all about figuring out how to address conflict and transform it, but in a way that isn't necessarily so violent. It's, you know, some people, Aikido has the same issues that Aris has. All these people who have done Taekwondo and Karate, they go, Aikido is not a real martial art. Sound familiar? Sound familiar? It's like, why do all martial arts have to be violent and take away from the other person? Mm-hmm. Aris isn't trying to take away or take anything from anybody, right? She's just challenging to grow up.
Yeah.
So I think Aikido is, you know, a fantastic potential like area of study. And if you look at any of the works of the founder, Morihei Ueshiba, he wrote a lot of philosophical texts. He was a Sagittarius, like me, like you. You know, he wrote a lot of text on how to transform conflict and make it sacred. Mm. And that's very Orishan. What are other ways to get to know Aris? A lot of self-study. Watch the culture wars. Like, be mindful, be aware, notice the dynamics that are happening, and look at global systems. Like, I think anyone who is looking at all the issues around diversity, equity, and inclusion, but actually bringing like awareness to it as opposed to like moralistic judgment and I need to get what's mine. If you take that pathway, it's like, there's more Aris there. And then, of course, I have stuff too that I'm writing constantly about activism and, you know, Aris herself and global systems, inclusion. I think these are all ways to get to know the goddess and, you know, to take these things that we've talked about beyond just the conceptual and actually apply them. Because Aris is applied. She gives no sense about, you know, what books you read. It's more like, did it work? again, Saturn, you know, it's the exaltation of Saturn. It's like, did you do it? Did it work? Like, show me the receipts, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, those are all some ways to get to know Aris. And I probably will tweet about her all the time and have plenty more to say.
Okay, great. So first, how can people like get in touch with you? How can they find out more about your, like, you have an Aris lecture, I think, and like, how do people like book a consultation or get in contact with you?
Yeah, really simple to get in touch with me and, you know, learn about me. My website is spokengeneration.com. So it's really easy to find me there if you want to do a consult. I do natal chart readings. What else? I write a newsletter called The Activist Tools. So I try to make a lot of these more seemingly etheric concepts much more bite-sized and practical. So I sort of apply a little bit of Mercury to a lot of the Orishan concepts, and it's totally free. You don't even have to give me your email. It's all on my website at spokengeneration.com. And I have an intro lecture on Aris, and, you know, I would love to hear from people what they want to learn about, what comes up for them. But that intro lecture is also available on my website. It's called Sacred Rage, How Aris Restores the Scales of Justice.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So that's great. And now we know where to find you or how to contact you. My last question then is, what or who inspires you astrologically?
Astrologically, what or who inspires me astrologically? Yeah. Can you say a little bit more about that question?
Yeah, sure. It's like, now I get that Aries really inspires you astrologically, probably. But like, we usually ask our guests, like, is there a concept, something in astrology, something outside of astrology or a specific astrology or anything like that really like inspires you to do your astrological work and think about astrology?
Yeah, fantastic question. You know, I think I'm gonna have to give you the most honest answer. And the most honest answer I can give is that Marianne Williamson, you know, who is she's many things, activist, author, New York Times bestselling author, spiritual leader, what have you, is running for president of the United States. And to me, that's huge, because finally we have somebody who is representing a politics that is humanist and that is not transactional, that takes, I mean, at least in the United States, we have what we call, what I call the four Americas. There are sort of four major worldviews in America. And she has decided to take the best of every worldview and try and represent that in her platform while rejecting the negatives of each of the worldviews. It's very rare to get someone in US politics anyway who is like that, especially in a country that has so much influence in the world. And so why am I inspired by her? Number one, she's never poo-pooed astrology. She has, you know, she has talked about its history, how it was, how the founding fathers of the US actually used astrology and how it was known as a gentleman's art, how the founding fathers actually used a grand water trine in their election. When they founded the country. And she understands that, you know, she's, the way that she puts it is, astrology was just psychology before there was psychology. She talked about, you know, the shift of Jupiter and Saturn from Earth to air. She listens to Pam Gregory, but it's not like she's going around and just spitting astrology everywhere. So, you know, and she's incredibly Aresian. So I'm very interested in this because I really care about applied astrology. I think it's great that there are archetypes. I think it's great that, you know, there's so much astrology in my chart. Like, you know, the third triplicity lord of the ninth house is in a night chart and domicile, like super astrological, right? My bound ruler of the midheaven is Mercury, super astrological. You know, my sun is the midpoint of Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, pretty astrological. But I want to see astrology applied. And so, yeah, I have to be honest, I'm really inspired by people who are deeply contemplative and deeply spiritual, who are showing up in these real places. And that's what inspires me to study further so I can understand when somebody is having, you know, a panicked reaction to a change in the status quo, I can diagnose that. When someone is going through something really hard, period, but also in the service of bending the arc of the moral universe towards justice, I get to support them and say, oh, yeah, it looks like this is going on. And then to follow up and not just give information, but to, you can offer remediation technically, but also just to be a person and be like, what's it like for you to be in this? Who could support you in this? When we get past all of the shallows, and even astrology has its shallows, we can't mistake the simulations for the real thing. We've got to live the real thing. And so, yeah, I got to be honest with you. I'm really inspired by this woman right now who's running for president, who gets it. She gets it. And I hope that more and more people will welcome her to the party as well.
That's cool. Yeah, like astrology applied. I like that concept.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right. Okay, Rainer, what an amazing pleasure it's been to have you on the podcast. I was so happy when you said yes to becoming a guest. And can I share how we started talking to each other?
Yeah.
Because it might be relevant.
Well, you're just talking about the community, right?
Yeah. I mean, like we met on the platform Discord. So, and that is very Aries.
I'm comfortable with that. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was just going to say that it's interesting also how the two of us met online, because it was on the platform Discord, which is like a very Aries.
Oh, word. I see what you're saying. Like the word. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Discord has a birth chart somewhere, and I won't get into that, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. And please feel welcome to come back to the podcast if you have more things to say and more topics to bring on. And thank you to all our listeners and everyone who's been watching the YouTube video. And see you next time. Bye. Thank you.